You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 24th of March, 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say that today we have a very special guest with us. We have Mr. Jason Coney, No White Guilt, from Patriotic Weekly Review, and fresh from his speech at the Patriotic Alternative Conference. Jason, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you?
I'm absolutely magnificent. No coronavirus over here. It was a great joy to meet you, good sir, and an honor. And I thank you so much for your service to white well-being. That weekend during the conference where we met, you did a magnificent job. All of the tech came out beautifully. And I could not have been more elated with the entire experience. And it's wonderful to be here now. Thank you so much for the honor of appearing on your program and being able to speak with your audience.
Well, it was great to meet you, Jason. I mean, I've been following you for quite some time, actually. I think the first time I heard from you was an interview with Red Ice, and this was back when it was just your voice that we could hear. And I thought you were somebody a lot older than you were, and I mean this as a big compliment, because you really seemed to know what you were talking about. And then I saw a picture of you, and I was, wow, this guy's really young, and he's really got his head screwed onto his shoulders well. And then I started seeing you on the podcasts with Mark, very impressed with that, and your inspirational speeches that you give there. And I, you know, when Mark suggested, well, why don't we get Jason for the Patriotic Alternative Conference? We want to have him as like the main speaker. I was like, yes, definitely, definitely. He would be fantastic. You know, I've always wanted to see what you were like with a big audience, you know?
Yeah, me too. I had spoken probably, that's one of the biggest audiences, certainly at the Patriotic Alternative Conference. I'd spoken many years ago to maybe just over 200 for a different organization. It seems like it's so many eras ago now, still in service to white well-being, but had a lot of success back then. That's a whole nother story, that we would have been a lot further down the road with success if we didn't have some problems back then in the white positive sphere with intellectuals, or I guess holding down those who had not spent their life in academia. But nonetheless, it is a great honor to be able to work with the likes of Mark Collett. He is a gentleman's gentleman, a hero's hero, and everybody that he's going to be calling friend is somebody I'm willing to call friend as well.
Yeah, I think we're very, very lucky to have him over here in Britain. I think America is lucky to have you. I mean, how did you first sort of come across nationalism and ethno-nationalism? Because I seem to recall you weren't always into that. Were you into the Republican Party or something at first?
Well, no, I was very lucky. If I could tie this to any specific moment in my life's history, it was when I was in preschool. Actually, it was a non-denominational preschool, and we had the teachers brought in the Christian preschool. We had the teachers brought in a flip chart, this large flip chart with cartoon characters on it. And the cartoon characters were doing good behavior or bad behavior. Now, they were drawn to look like actual children. And I noticed, perhaps just by chance, I guess is what it was, that all of the cartoon characters that were doing bad were little white boys just like me, and that all of the victims of the bad behavior, things like pulling hair, cutting in line, stealing toys, all of the victims were non-white children. And I had non-white friends at the Christian non-denominational school, and I knew that they were every bit as bad, if not worse, than the way that I behaved and the other little white boys behaved. And so that ended up causing me, I had no idea obviously what was going on in the world, but that ended up causing me to have an eye and an ear for things that were targeting us. So the very next thing I noticed were the songs in the Christian school that we sang focused on how all of the different races were the same. And of course, I knew they were different. And so I thought that that's quite strange. And on into elementary school, which I guess is your primary school over there. And I learned we had songs there as well, where we were singing about how the country belongs to everyone. And we're naming all of these different races of people and how the country belongs to everyone else. So I noticed that, and I noticed how in our history that we would read that we were always the bad guys. So there was this push for us to feel bad. Now, I didn't know what was going on at all. This was just a really almost like a community focused. I saw us, you know, as an entity, a people that were being attacked. And I just was objecting to it. But it wasn't until I reached what we called what we still call junior high school or middle school. And it's different across the United States. But in this part of the United States, it's 11 to 13 years of age. And it's usually two grades, so seven and eighth grade. And I began asking, seventh grade, I began asking my peers about this. I began asking my teachers and the administration at the school about this because I was perfectly naive. I thought it was accidental, and I believed what the anti-whites were saying. I called them then by the names of their taking, things like progressive and liberal and that sort of thing. And I thought that it was just an accident that we were getting harmed in this process of doing good for everyone and doing good for the world. And I realized to my horror at that time that indeed that was not the case, that they were intending to harm us, and that the reasons that they gave were just pretexts. The reasons of doing good for this group or that group or what have you was just a pretext to inflict the harm. And so it was then that I dedicated my life to freeing our people of, I didn't have the name for it at that time, I only knew what it was, which I ended up calling anti-whiteism when I got older. And because I knew that I didn't have the intelligence or power, resources or what have you to take on whatever this was that was pushing to harm our people, but that if I could help in some small way to free us of this poison, then our innate instincts and talents, abilities, et cetera, especially of those white brothers and sisters who were brighter, better looking, more connected, wealthier, et cetera, they would be able to come forward and do great things for our people. And it was around the age of 17 then, in what we call high school here, that I began helping organizations that are white positive. Most of those in the beginning were like pro-Southern. I'm a Southerner from Virginia, very proud of being a Southerner, and family fought in the war for Southern independence. And I began helping those organizations, passing out leaflets and this sort of thing. And just from there on, I have contributed in for the totality of my life. Now, I did work. You mentioned there briefly, I did work on the Hill. So you mentioned the Republicanism. I worked in the center, the nerve center for the conservative movement in the United States. And so it was all part of my process of working for white well-being and conservatism in the United States, and to a lesser degree, the Republican Party is tacitly white positive, or at least considered for the longest time of the white people's party. I mean, we're the vast majority of those who vote for Republicans or independents, etc. And I got to see there firsthand the leaders of the most powerful, the largest conservative organizations in the country meet with White House staff, senators, and House members on a weekly basis. We had a Wednesday luncheon. And so I got to see firsthand exactly how the power structure works in the United States and see that it was all a farce, that indeed democracy was a farce. It was control of those control of government by way of those who control the dissemination of information. And so I worked there for a couple of years and then moved on to another job, but never stopped serving white well-being, and I continue to do so to this day.
Well, it sounds to me like that was very fortuitous that you did actually, you know, work on the Hill, because it would have helped you with your presentation, helped you to understand how all of these things work, because you always turn out very well. You're always wearing a shirt, you're wearing a tie, you present yourself for the podcast that you do with Mark. I'm very impressed with that. And I was just thinking then, it seems to me as if you stayed true to that white racial spirit, which you knew was good, because if you've got all that propaganda at you and it's sort of saying to you, well, you're a bad guy, your people are a bad guy, you've did all these bad things in the past, the temptation is there to just behave like a bad person. Now, mm-hmm. you used a lot of terms, you know, like you were talking about white well-being there, but during your speech you spoke about this bio spirit. Would that have been the sort of thing that, you know, that you would describe as that was what helped you to know that something was wrong and to stay true to being a good person?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think at the time, you know, back then I didn't know exactly what was, I guess, moving through me and through us as a people and what really united us. We were told, as were all of the little white children around the world and continue to be told, that essentially race is not real. Peoplehood is not real, and there's no difference but color. You still hear adults. It is remarkable to hear adults say that, oh, it's just a color, as though it is a shirt that you're wearing, your essence, who exactly you are. But I knew that there was something very different about the different peoples of the world, and I could just discern this. I observed this. And I was a keen observer of human nature over the years, and perhaps this moment in preschool was the, you know, really the ignition for how I became focused on peoplehood, the differences. I asked questions, the anti-whiteism, and then this ended up influencing how I viewed and broke down and helped others to understand what the anti-whites were doing and how they were harming us. And that is that by seeing that they were harming us, their infections, their propaganda became clear to me every time they used it on me, rather than their propaganda manipulating me. And so that was, in later years, I was able to use that to my advantage to help people go free, as we say now, many years later. But I realized that the different races of man had something intrinsic that was very different, something that was quintessential to their being. And in later years, termed this the biosphere, that on some level, there is a biological element that we can look at with our microscopes, we can study, we have instrumentation for this, and we can see a great many differences. And indeed, there are whole organizations that spend probably way too much time on talking endlessly about all of the differences. It is important, and they do a much better job about it than I do. There were these biological differences, but yet there were also these spiritual differences that we don't have the machinery yet to be able to measure. We might be able to measure it more in the future, just as we were unable, you know, in decades past, centuries past, to measure the things we're able to measure now. But ultimately, I was able to term this biospirit, for those who are just trying to understand it, what exactly a biospirit is. You can look at it as instinct. Every animal has an instinct. Every race or breed, these are interchangeable in biology, they have different instincts. You can think about different dogs, different hunting dogs, pointers and scent dogs, and all of these different things, different instincts. And so we have very different instincts. And these instincts, when we project them onto the world in their aggregate, are culture. This is what culture is. It's the instinct of the human animal projected onto our environments, whatever those environments may be, in their aggregate. So that is why wherever white people go, we create Western culture. It's why wherever Asian people go, they create Asian culture. Black people create black culture. It doesn't matter where we go. You could take the entire population of the UK. And when I say that, I mean of the UK. I'm not talking about paper British or paper Irish. I'm talking about people who have the UK in their blood, in their biospirits. And you could put them on the moon. You could put them on one of Saturn's moons. And that's where the UK would be. So sometimes I've run afoul of those who are tied to some of these older ideologies. And you really, Sven, are touching upon an important point there. And that is that when you hear the growing up your entire life that you're the bad guy, it's just natural to go with the story. And that's exactly what it is. We refer to it as an anti-white narrative that we're the bad guys. But what I was saying the other night, just for example, is that we are the characters who have gotten up off of the pages of the anti-white narrative in rebellion of the author, the anti-white author of that book, because that book leads to a sanguinary, a bloody end for our people. And we have pen in hand and blank page before us, and we are writing our own stories now. And in those stories, we are the heroes, we are the good guys, and we have a glorious destiny that we are going to fulfill. So ultimately, it is instinct. The biospirit is instinct, and it is a single biospirit for the totality of Western kind, which means that we could, you, for example, are more American because America is in you. It can't be someplace else. You are more American than any non-white person born in America, even if their family has been born in this country for a great many years, because this is nothing more than a name and invisible lines drawn on a landscape without those who project it out of their biospirit. So I, too, then am a Brit. I'm a Frenchman. I'm a German. I'm all of these things. I can move seamlessly. And that's why we integrate so easily into each other's culture, even though we do have distinct hues of Western civilization. And recapturing our destiny presupposes that we will embrace all of those hues. We will embrace that diversity. So I am wont to say that once we recapture our destiny, the English will be more English. Southerners in the U.S. here will be more Southern. The Polish will be more Polish. And we will love that, because for whatever reason about our biospirit, who and what we are, we love that manifestation of the spirit of the West inside of us. And I spoke about that at the conference, and it is this: the spirit of the West ultimately is the spirit of the biospirit of our people. And perhaps it is that we find a true worship and a love and a calling for that spirit when we see its great many hues and manifestations in the world around us.
Well, I think America shows that you can put the different white nations together and they will blend seamlessly into a new white nation. And I think also particularly in America, you also had the blacks there. So they were sort of juxtaposed against the whites. And I think that helped whites to come together, because they could see that once they had this other race there, they could see that there really wasn't that much difference between the whites, because they could see that there was something that was very different there. Before then, you had like different classes back in Europe, and that was sort of, they tried to do away with that in America. Now, another thing that you talked about when you were talking about that, I had a question in the chat room asking about what would be your vision for uniting, because I think when we had in America, you had this other race there, and that helped whites to unite. And today we are facing so many different threats in our countries. All our countries have become multicultural, but is that going to be enough to unite white people together to fight against that and realize our destiny, do you think?
I think that we need, I mean, that's almost heading into the territory, and I thank the questioner for the question. It's almost heading into the territory of worse is better, and worse is only better if we have an alternative. We can look to many cases where we see that worse is simply worse. South Africa, Rhodesia, these are tragic cases. of having failed to provide a people and our people with a psychological defense against the psychological warfare that is waged against us. And if we don't have this psychological defense, and part and parcel of the psychological defense is that we are a single people with many countries. If we don't have this psychological defense that we have as our bulwark and as our shield against the psychological warfare that is used against us, then we will end up in flames. We will end up in ruins, as we see in South Africa and Rhodesia, and increasingly in the countries across the West today. So part of the healing, part of the recapturing of our destiny, of the numerous levels that that means, is that we grapple first with this reality that even though we have long-standing historical antagonisms among all of the different groups of our people, that we realize that much of that is born out of anti-whites running us against each other for their benefits over the millennia. Part of it is just error on our part. And nonetheless, we have to be willing to accept that we are one and the same, a single people, and that the hand of the West brings us into being in many different forms and many different hues, different hair and eye color, slightly different skin tones. As a consequence, we have also followed in error these petty chieftains, if you will, over the hills to slaughter our brothers and sisters for the enrichment of petty chieftains. And being separated, we develop different languages and different cuisines and things of these nature. And as you point out, we have seen for far too long that these things are, we've seen them as these huge dividing lines between the white people, Western kind on one hill and Western kind on another hill. But on a broader view of things, we then realize that there is an other with a capital O. There are numerous others with capital O's, and that we indeed are a single people, and we need to come together again on that basis as a single people without threat. As I say, it's with the presupposition that we are going to maintain and, in fact, magnify and deepen and enrich those subtle hues, those little differences that we have amongst ourselves, but with the deeper, more mature, socio-politically mature knowledge that we are a single entity and that our survival as individuals is wholly bound up with our survival and well-being as a people. Only by way of that knowledge and that acceptance are we going to be able to survive this anti-white war that is being waged against us all around planet Earth.
So you're definitely not a fan of accelerationism then. Do you feel as if you are closer to the British at all? I mean, we have this thing that's called the special relationship, which is supposed to be between Britain and America. And I know that I get on very well with the American co-hosts and other American hosts that I have at Radio Albion. You get on very well with Mark. You appear on these British podcasts. Do you feel that you have a closer relationship to the British maybe than other nations? And do you think that that's just based on language, the shared language, or do you think that there could be more to it than that?
Well, I think that the ease of communication obviously plays a huge role. And fortunately, though, since business is conducted around the world in English, we see that many of our brothers and sisters now that their native language might be Italian, for example. Our Italian brothers and sisters are really suffering. But a great many of them speak English as well, there is some ease of communication there. But nonetheless, we have, when it comes, I think, between the United States and the UK, such similarities, because the United States really is an English country. It was English and then to a lesser degree German. So there is that familiarity that does make, I think, communication and collaboration easier or smoother than maybe with some of the other countries Without question, I would say that that is the case. But that is all the more the reason why those of us who are American, those of us who are, and I would also say there might be a little bit more of a connection between, I mean, even though the northern states in the United States are referred to as New England, I think that the connection between the South, Southerners and Englishmen is probably maybe even a little bit closer, because we in the South, we held on to the Oxford Dictionary. We did a lot of things that were very English for longer, especially although, you know, all the way up through the loss of our bid for independence from the United States. And so there's the connection there. But all the more reason why those of us in the UK and America should serve as an example to the rest of our brothers and sisters around the world of this sort of collaboration, that demonstrating that, yes, indeed, we are a single people. We are the same, whether we are born in Ireland or whether we're born in North Carolina. If you are a member of Western kind, if you have the spirit of the West inside of you, then we are a single people, and we can come together irrespective of what our breakfasts look like or what our flags look like, and work and fight for each other. And this is the kind of collaboration, this is the kind of unity that the anti-whites really don't want us to have. I mean, they want to break us down all the way down to the individual, and they've had a lot of success doing that, so that even in our employment and in school, we think as individuals we are alone if we care about the well-being of our people and white children, and our destiny and our dignity. So trying to break us down and successfully doing so all the way to the point of just seeing us as atomized individuals is the goal and the success of anti-whitism. So bringing it all the way up through uniting in our communities, uniting in our states, uniting in our countries, and then uniting globally. That is the ultimate fear of the anti-whites, because they know then that we can bring together the resources of the great sweeping intelligence of Western kind, our many talents. And that was one of the things that when I was in junior high school that I discovered, I up to seventh grade was only taking pride in the fact that I was a Southerner, an American. I mean, we had in the South a saying that American by birth, but Southern by the grace of God. And so we took pride in, I took pride in being a Southerner and Southern heroes and in an American and the American heroes. But then when I realized that all of Western kind was my people, I was suddenly filled with all of the richness and the beauty and the success of all of the Western countries. So every great Westerner, every great white man, every great white woman was suddenly in my veins, and I could tap into them. That was a true power. This I can tell you, the exact opposite of people like Jordan Peterson, who will tell you that you need to be deracinated, you need to be isolated, you need to only take pride in your successes as an individual. No, the exact opposite. He's selling a poison. The exact opposite is true. When you realize that you are an inheritor of all of the glory of the Russians, of the Poles, of the Italians, you know, of all of our Western countries, the Australians, then you truly find that there is a deep well of magic and history for you to tap into, and to embolden you and fill you with that great power as you move forward in your life to serve white well-being and the good of our people.
It is a very powerful feeling. I think when we look at the other white nations, it's like all brothers or sisters in one family. There may be slight differences between them, slight different ways that they look, and as you say, with that bio spirit, that slightly different bio spirit that each one has, and it produces a different culture. But we need to be looking at them as all members of one family. And then when you think of brother nation is going to war against another brother nation. How can the family win when one brother is fighting against another brother? They can't possibly win. And I think doing the podcasts and working together across borders in the way that we do, as you say, this sets a really good example. And you can expand it from English working with American, Germans are Anglo-Saxon as well. You can look at Russia. Even Russia believes that they have a very close relationship with England, and they look towards the English. They share the patron saint, St. George. And you can expand it from there to looking at the history of Denmark and how they intermingled with the Slavs, and the Slavs would invade Denmark and Denmark would invade the Slavs. And they actually had quite a close relationship a thousand years ago. And you can see that all the different white nations, all the different breeds of white nations, they all come from the same family, and it's the good of this, of our family, that we need to be putting first. And we do that by setting a good example, like we do with these podcasts, and having guests coming over from coming over from America to come and speak in Britain. And I guess these are some of the subjects that you're expanding on in your books then, are you, Jason? You've got three books, I believe. One is a comedy, and you've also got Born Guilty and Go Free. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about your books before we finish?
Yes, I'll just thank you very much for that opportunity. Well, first is the novelette. It's a comedy, Damn It, is the title. And it's not political in any way. It's just for a lark. We laugh here too in the white positive sphere. And it's available also in print or on Kindle. I should say, and on Kindle. Then you have Go Free. Now, Go Free is an instruction manual. This is where, over the years, I have dedicated myself to helping our brothers and sisters go free. It's how I term it. There have been other terms like red pill that came about a long time later, long after I came up with the going free concept. But essentially, what I did over the years was I explored different ways of persuading our brothers and sisters to come over to a healthier view of themselves and our people, and come away from this anti-whiteism, come away from these poisonous ideas. As I said, I was a student of human nature, and I could observe these different ideas and how they functioned in us and how they caused us stress. Which of course causes illness. It causes self-imposed limitations that you don't even really are aware of. That you're doing this to yourself. And I went through a lot of errors. I found ways to persuade that required a lot of mental dexterity. It required me to be observing the person I was speaking with, so I could see their reactions. I could see the faces they would make, and I needed ultimately a way to persuade that I could teach others to use, so that they could persuade those around them. And so I came to these concepts of thought chains. I came to this understanding of what we refer to as meme pathogens, MPs, in the dialectics of and lexicon of going free. So effectively, I developed an entire doctrine of dialectics, of verbiage, that anyone can learn to use. And they first use them on themselves to treat themselves for these poisonous ideas that they're infected with, these anti-white ideas that they're infected with. And you have to treat yourself for them, because these are the things that undermine your life. They undermine your potential physical, mental, and spiritual. And they're causing illness, because anything that causes stress, and certainly the belief that you don't deserve to be alive, is something that causes stress. And stress can engender, it can cause disease, and it can certainly exacerbate diseases that you may be predisposed to. So it's going to also limit your potential that you have if you believe that you're from an evil people. And I say, let me just back up. If you believe that you shouldn't be alive, and sometimes people wonder, well, what do you mean, believe you shouldn't be alive? If you believe, and the vast majority of our population believes, that the only good white person is an anti-white white person, then you have delegitimized our right to exist. And that is to believe that you don't deserve to be alive. And so that is something deeply wounding and pernicious in the body of our people. And so I concluded that I had to help folks treat these, and did experiments with this, did experiments with the types of arguments that were that could be used, got rid of the ones that were not successful, you kept the ones that were. This is why I stuck with using, for example, anti-white and anti-whiteism. There are a great many more. So there are, inside of Go Free, you'll learn about meme pathogens. These are the poisonous ideas that anti-whites provide us with, things like diversity is a strength. And you'll also learn what we refer to as MCs, meme curatives. And these are the counters for this. You need to empower yourself with these things. And it needed to be something that folks could then, once learned and treating themselves for, they could then pass on to those around them. They could help others go free. And we have proof of concept again and again and again. We have five people who have openly said that they were on the path to suicide. We call that the ultimate white flight. They've gotten off that path because of this. We have two babies born, and not because they were couples, people who met just simply at a white positive function, and then they decide they fell in love and they decided to have children. No, these are babies that the couples decided that they were going free and that they're going to have children because of going free. And there may be twins on the way. So we might go from 2 to 4. We have people getting off of drugs, people getting off of alcohol, improving themselves, recapturing their destinies on various levels. We've had so much proof of concept. It's endless. The book right now, Go Free, second edition, iteration 1, is available on Kindle, and I have the price right now at $2.99 for the first 399 downloads, and I think because of the plague going around, I'm going to keep it there for right now so that it makes it easy for folks to get a hold of, and they can read now while they're trapped at home, and they can begin helping themselves go free so that when you're finally allowed to leave home, you'll be a better you. And then finally, Born Guilty is a frame narrative. It's experimental literature. It is something very different than what people would have read before. It's effectively, you visit me at my apartment on the property of a millionaire. It was an actual place that I lived. And I speak directly to you in these vignettes during the course of the book. And I tell you about my life. I name you Reader, as I don't know the actual name of the person reading. So I speak directly to you. There are over 200 illustrations that help provide information that, as a reader, you need during these vignettes, help you to understand where exactly you are in the world with me in this apartment. I'm not with you the whole time, though. When I'm not with you, you read from these other books and essays that are in my study. And so those are sewn into Born Guilty. Crucible is one of those. It's about my time in junior high school and about coming to the realization of what's happening, the resistance against this anti-white force that's in the world, and my struggles to want to be liked, to want to have, you know, at that time, 11 to 13 years of age, just beginning to want little girls to want to say hello to me and smile at me, and instead having the opposite, having them hate on me for saying positive things about our people. And then there's also Prometheus Rising, which is a mythopoetic book. It's written in a lyrical style, and it is about the creation of all things, the creation of our people, and it tracks a narrative arc from the beginning of time all the way up to the present. And it's a bit of like Lord of the Rings-esque in its nature. I talk about my time on the hill during the little vignettes. So you can see in this book there is a great many things for a great many different people. And all of these are available on Amazon. They are also available at nowhiteguiltcollectibles.com. And those are all available through there. Those are all just printed, and I will sign all of those if folks acquire them through there. But the first two are also can be acquired on Kindle, which can also be Kindle app, irrespective of what platform you might be on. And in the very near future, we are going to be producing a standalone version of Prometheus Rising. And in the near future after that will be an artist's edition of Prometheus Rising, which is going to include a great many works of art from people in the white positive sphere, poetry, music. There'll be links to music. We have, for example, folks making songs dedicated to the story itself. So there'll be sketches that are right out of, you know, dedicated to the story itself of Prometheus Rising. Very exciting times, and I invite everybody to have a look. I am No White Guilt on YouTube, and you can find me at nowhiteguilt.org as well. And another website to find me at, and my colleague Jared George, is at theafterparty.tv, where it's sort of a storing house where we keep all of our material that we do videography wise. And that's about it for all that I have book wise and content wise.
Yeah, I've seen Prometheus Rising name checked places. I think Imminent Rain has been writing some music to do with that. And just to finish here, I think you do certainly have a talent for defining concepts with words like mean pathogen. That is a particular favorite of mine. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Jason. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow, hopefully with Simon Harris. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.